The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia.
I'm confident in this group. We take them one at a time. Certainly have a big challenge in front of us at New York this week and against a Hall of Fame quarterback and a really good defense. So we just got to stay focused, taking it one day at a time and one game at a time here.
Mike Danger.
They got to beat the Jets with an interim head coach, right? I mean, Monday night, we're laughing, right? If they lose to the Jets, we're having a different conversation this time next week. I have a hard time seeing them losing to the Jets and an interim head coach, as it's a mess. The Jets are just going to jet. That's what they do.
Gene Battaglia.
I'm just not convinced the Bills are going to figure all this out on offense. That's also part of this, too. Put it this way. What makes you think that Josh Allen all of a sudden is going to, all right, it's the Jets. This is the team that has his number, the Jets.
Pretty special today. Let's go Mets.
95.7 FM and AM 950 The Fan, Rochester.
All right, so Gina, you mentioned the injuries in your update, and I'm sure you're not feeling that much more confident hearing what we heard today, that the Bills have a chance of getting over on the Jets come Monday night. We spent some time talking about how the Bills' skill position players just aren't necessarily plug and play, that when you make these throws that Allen is trying to make outside of the numbers this season, it's just not the same when you have a Diggs or even a Gabe Davis on the outside of those numbers. This is the arrogance of the Bills, but I get what they're thinking, and I don't think they're alone in this. I think in the NFL, there's an arrogance. There's, well, they can do it. Why can't we do it?
Yeah, well, I will give Brandon Bean a pass here in this regard, okay? The fact that they had to actually sit down, have a sit down with Diggs, and okay, this will be your last year, we'll move you off the roster. I think that was given. You couldn't afford to pay Gabe Davis, and what Jacksonville paid Gabe Davis. So they just didn't have a plan to replace those
yes,
guys.
I don't blame them for doing what they did. And at the time, they thought that that was what was best for the football team. But when you look at a team like Kansas City, 5-0, they beat the Saints on Monday night. Their leading pass catchers on Monday night were, in order, a guy cut by the Patriots, a guy that we said was a washed-up 35-year-old tight end, a guy cut by the Jets, a backup tight end, a rookie go-route runner, a running back cut by the Broncos, a running back the Browns didn't re-sign, and a receiver that was cut by the Dolphins. So you're the Bills or really any NFL team. You see this and you think, well, we could do that too, right? With Joe Brady is an Andy Reid. Josh Allen, sorry to say it, he's not Patrick Mahomes. And for the Bills to be where we want them to be, they both need to be better. And while I'm not blaming Allen for the two straight losses, the decision-making needs to improve. You got to get back to taking the easy between-the-numbers throws underneath that the defense gives you. Mahomes has been brilliant at it his entire career, and Allen needs to be more consistent in this regard.
Well, I'd also point out this, too. Why are the Chiefs winning games? They allowed in the last 3 weeks 17 points to a guy who's being a top-10 paid quarterback. 10 points to a guy who's being paid a top-10 quarterback. And they allowed 13 points to the Saints. Their defense is getting the job done. So if you're just going to draw some comparison, it's, hey, they're the ones actually playing complementary football. Because eye test with the Chiefs offense,
That's right. This
doesn't look like the Chiefs. And you think, ah, they're doomed. Ha-ha, they're doomed. And
they're not.
Well, they're not. They're going to continue to pile up wins. And sooner or later, these guys are just going to kind of gel together. Look at baseball. Like, do the Mets have this great lineup? For that matter, the Royals. Or the Tigers. Like, it just sometimes it will gel. It will gel. But
is that your plan going into the offseason? Hey, let's bring in Curtis Samuel, MVS, and let's hope it gels. Let's hope it all comes together with a rookie. I guess that's what I'm talking about. I mean, talent is important when you don't have Patrick Mahomes. Patrick Mahomes can mask a lot of deficiencies, and I think Josh Allen can do the same. But only when Josh Allen is playing smart, not when Josh Allen's trying to make impossible throws on every single dropback. He was 30%, man, against Houston. It was not a great game for Josh Allen. I'm not blaming him for the loss. There's a lot of blame to go around for why they lost to the Texans. And in the second half, the offense kind of woke up a little bit. But, man, he missed on some throws.
He missed on what would have been four throws after he was concussed. I mean, I'm sorry. He was not concussed whatsoever.
He was cleared.
Yeah, that was not. He's not in protocol because there was no concussion. Look, if we're playing blame assessment for the Bills, and we talked to Matt Perino yesterday. If you missed that, you can find that wherever you find your great audio on the Odyssey app, we suggest. What about Dawson Knox? Three catches for 30 yards in five games? We want to point the finger at, hey,
you're not getting value out of Knox. You're not getting value out of Samuel.
No, but okay, Samuel you whiffed on, but you had to make these hard choices. And we're saying, yes, see, let go of Mitch Morse and look, it all worked out. And you could have moved on from Dawson Knox, but because he's really tight with Josh Allen, is that the reason he's here? I asked Matt Perino point blank yesterday, hey, are we watching a player with diminishing skills? Matt was saying no. He wasn't ready to go there. Okay, then what is it? Because you're paying him like a top tight end in this league. I understand you have two tight ends, but my gosh, use the talent you have here.
Yeah. There's a lot of blame to go around, but when I look at what the Chiefs do, and this isn't the first time they've done it. I mean, we all saw them do what they did the year after Tyreek Hill was going, oh, they're not going to be the same. They're not going to be the same. They don't look the same. They'll get something out of nothing. They'll get guys like Juju Smith-Schuster and Mecole Hardman. They will plug them in, and it will work. In that instance, they can throw S against the wall and see what sticks, and it will stick. You have Pat Mahomes. In the Bills' instance, you could throw S against the wall, hope it sticks, but you need Josh Allen to be a little bit better. You need your offensive coordinator to be a little bit better.
Yeah. It's two games. I'm not ready to panic. And look, you're not as bad as you looked last week. And I look, if the Bills end up being 3-3, isn't this where we thought they would be? Like, if you put this in reverse, the Bills losing to the Cardinals and Dolphins, but they won the last three, we'd be like, whoo, yeah, let's go here. Sure. Yeah, our recency bias plays a lot into this. Danger, the story out of Nashville where, hey, it's the SEC and it's the Big Ten, and they have this meeting with the investment capital firm named Smash Capital. What do they do? Well, just a bunch of investors, and, well, they've got some ex-Disney executives, a.k.a. ESPN, meeting with ADs from 30 Power 5 schools, or what do we call it now, 30 of the top conferences, asking to put together a proposal for $9 billion to reconfigure college football to make it a 70-school football league. Whether it's this or something like this in a few years, this does not feel inevitable, right? I'm going to go contrary on this. No, I don't think this is ever going to happen. How does that money get split up? You need an example here? Let's take Alabama. How do they feel in Alabama this week? What are they saying here? They're angry they lost to Vanderbilt. And rubbing salt in the wound, Alabama's the one that brings in the money, and Vanderbilt's getting some equal share? There's no way you're going to be able to divide up that $9 billion. Vanderbilt, lucky to be in the SEC. Missouri, at this point, lucky to be... You can sell a league concept in pro sports because, all right, owners buy in the idea that, newsflash, they want to sell eventually, sell higher, or at least live it to their kids and leave some sort of legacy. College presidents, they're not that forward.
So many questions about this because it is very intriguing to me. And when you kind of see how schools are jockeying right now, it almost feels like this is the inevitability, right? Like you want to be in the SEC, or you want to be in the Big Ten, and you don't want to be, if you're Syracuse, you don't want to be on the outside of a 70-school football league that includes all of the best teams that we watch year in and year out, right? You want to be relevant. You want to be a part of that as part of the ACC moving forward. So it feels like that is an inevitability. I hear what you're saying, and I'm wondering what the TV money looks like. I mean, you're going to infuse $9 billion into it if you're this investment firm, if you're Smash Capital. $9 billion, we're going to put this together. That $9 billion, I'm guessing some of that is going to go towards a TV deal. And then how does that TV revenue get shared across all of the schools?
I think first, the first thing you would do is okay, here's your $9 billion. There's your clean break. Bye, NCAA. We're okay, so that I yes. feel is inevitable.
That makes a lot of sense to me.
That feels inevitable, but why wouldn't just the big, at this point, the Big Ten and the SEC say, no, we figured this out before everybody else. I'm sorry, ACC. Well, we like you, Clemson and Syracuse, but no. Or maybe we'll just kind of cherry pick a few more and then call it a day here.
Or maybe it's not 70 schools. Maybe it is 50. Or maybe, you know, like that. That's a tough one, man. I feel like this is going to happen. I feel like what we're working towards in college football specifically, not college athletics, but college football, is they're their own programs. They are going to be run like organizations. They're going to have a GM. They're going to have somebody who's distributing that money, who's recruiting guys using the NIL money that they have. And they're going to, I mean, it's the wild, wild west. They're all going to be more competitive, and a team like Vanderbilt can rise up and beat Alabama on any given week because you just don't know.
So then who is going to police all this? Because from the NCAA, the basics here of, hey, go to class, make sure you're doing, you know, like all those things you're supposed to, finger quote, do above board.
Yeah.
If you're going to split off, are you really going to have somebody, hey, your quarterback, he hasn't, you know, he's got a 0-0. He's not playing this week. No, I don't think that would be the case at all.
Student athletes. Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
Like, let's just eliminate the student part of it and just recognize it is what it is. These guys are athletes. They're paid athletes for these college programs. They're bringing a lot of money for the school. Are we going to continue to hold them to an academic standard? I don't think that standard, does that standard still exist? I mean, do you still have players that are ineligible or that get benched or that miss time because their grades are garbage?
Well, you will always have the Ivy League and the Patriot League and some other leagues that won't be part of this.
Yeah,
70.
They won't be part of the 70.
No, they won't be part of the 70. But I think the idea, and this was actually Chip Kelly's kind of concept before he jumped ship at UCLA and went over to Ohio State. But he's talking about sharing. Okay, let's pick. You're Ohio State, you're going to share with Rutgers? No.
If you had an equal split, you're saying Ohio State wouldn't be okay with that. That they
you
should get more.
You see this in the ACC right now. This is the infighting in the ACC that Clemson and Florida State
they
like
want
saying,
more.
Hey, you don't want us to leave? Pay up. And I don't fault them for doing that.
Right. They're more valuable than the other ACC schools, they believe.
Wake Forest is not as valuable as Clemson.
Right. And so in the way this is being proposed, do we know that this is how it's being proposed? I mean, I guess we don't know the intricate details of how this $9 billion would be distributed, but I would have to imagine it wouldn't be an equal split, that it wouldn't be a complete revenue share.
I think I'd be surprised if this is the model they go off of. And $9 billion, I would think that you can get much, much more here. If you brought it in and you actually sold things, like, I mean, it wasn't until this year they actually had advertising on the field. Like, why can't you do other things like advertising? Like, there are so many revenue streams in college football.
Oh, that the university presidents ever went through because, you know, it's a conflict of interest. We're there for the student athletes. We're not going to compromise ourselves.
That's so quaint. When are they going to start? Yeah, I mean, they're going to start putting names on the stadiums, right? Like, the famous historic stadiums that have names of legendary names. They're going to...
If college is danger, and this is the biggest loophole of all time, are all tax exempt, why haven't we seen more schools take the NFL model and, hey, you know what? We're going to build our own stadium and keep all this luxury revenue, and then we'll just kind of wine and dine and everything. Northwestern's building their own stadium. Now, it's not going to look like an NFL stadium. That's why they're playing this makeshift thing. But will there be more schools like that? Because Penn State, okay, I get it. And I've never been there, but I've driven by it. Like, that's a big old Rector set. Why don't you have, like, a stadium that actually you could make more money in? Lots of ideas running through my head.
Well, it's an intriguing time. I mean, I guess if we're in the moment, this college football season has been bananas already, right? Like, to see Alabama, Georgia a couple weeks ago, and what a just a magnificent college football game that was, only to see Alabama fall on their face the following week to Vandy, and everything is up in the air.
Right, and the part of this, too, danger is, in the old system, Alabama's done.
Yeah.
You're done. Well, they're not done.
No.
They're not done.
And I don't think they should be done, by the way. Like,
no, you lose at Vanderbilt, you should be
out. I'm sorry, man. I want to see them in the postseason. I want to see a rematch of what we saw 2 weeks ago. I want to see Alabama and Georgia or something of the like. I want to see Alabama, Texas. I want to see those schools. I would rather see Alabama with one bad loss than Boise State.
This expanded playoff is going to invite somebody in. Dare I say Army. They're undefeated.
That will be interesting to me.
Navy's still undefeated.
That will be interesting to me because I don't know that programs know how to deal with what they throw at you, right? Like, the way they play is not something that's easy to practice. They don't practice defending against that. It would be fun. It would be fun to watch.
It would be a blowout.
It would be fun to watch.
It would be a blowout.
It would be fun to watch. I don't think it would be a blowout. I don't think those schools are going to get blown. I think it would be fun to watch. All right. Well, that's the future. And I would love to be a fly on the wall for that presentation, for that pitch to those 30 schools.
Can you imagine all these ADs just drinking their wine in the afternoon or whatever it is? And
yeah, I'm kind of jealous. Talking about throwing around money like that, $9 billion to create a super conference in college football. That would be something. Jim Riley is the host of the Barreled Up podcast, Ball Cap Sports on YouTube. You can hear his work in the free-to-download Odyssey app. And if you're going to check out Ball Cap on YouTube, may I suggest giving a like and a subscribe to The Fan Rochester, where we stream our show every afternoon, our channel, The Fan Rochester, on YouTube, also streaming on Twitch. And don't forget, you can get us on your smart device when you ask it to play 95.7 The Fan. We talk Major League Baseball postseason with Riley next on The Fan.
You're listening to The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. On 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan Rochester. The Fan Rochester Sports Update.
Bills with some injury issues. We already knew about Khalil Shakir and Oliver. They were not on the field today. Also not practicing, James Cook and Curtis Samuel, both with toe/foot issues. On the good news, Taylor Rapp has cleared concussion protocol. Taron Johnson was limited today. Head coach Sean McDermott on the Jets defense.
I think they give most people problems, right? So really good defense, really talented defense. You know, it starts up front for them like most good defenses, and they've got high draft picks scattered throughout the entire defense, every level of defense, and we'll have our hands full.
Bills and Jets, our coverage begins Monday at 4 o'clock here on The Fan Rochester. 4 games in baseball today, 1 in progress. The Tigers are up on the Guardians, 2-0 there in the top of the 5th. Coming up at 5 o'clock hour, the Mets taking on the Phillies. Gene Battaglia, the sports leader, The Fan Rochester.
Pull up a stool and join us. 585-866-4FAN. 866-4326. The Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia on the Sports Leader, 95.7 FM and AM 950, The Fan, Rochester.
Let's talk some baseball postseason with our favorite Jim Riley. He is the host of the Barreled Up podcast and the free-to-download Odyssey app. Also, Ball Cap Sports, the YouTube channel worth checking out if you're a baseball fan. And Jim, I feel like we are absolutely spoiled as sports fans when you look at these four division series happening right now, all of them 1-1 at one point. Now we've got the Tigers with the lead here over the Guardians. We've got three more games today. I mean, you've got to be foaming at the mouth with enthusiasm over this divisional round.
There is, at the best time of year, we're seeing some of the best baseball, individual performances, team performances across the board. It's great. You know, the fact that we're advancing through these divisional rounds, and we're not seeing sweeps, we're not seeing lopsided results. These are great matchups, and like you said, we got four games today. And two of them could be done. We could see the National League wrap up tonight. I don't know if that's really what'll happen, but it could happen. And it's a great, it's just, like you said, I'm really excited and enthusiastic about the baseball that we're seeing.
Yeah, Jim, let's start with the American League. And while we were in commercial break, I was joking with Danger. Are we ready for a Tigers-Royals ALCS? And Yankee fans are saying no, of course. I'm sure Fox executives, they hold the World Series rights, are saying no. The Yankees were cruising along. They've got Rodon in game two. And then baseball happens. It just kind of all falls apart in one inning. So the Yankees now going on the road, what I would think would be a hostile environment tonight, that wasn't helped out in any matters by Jazz Chisholm saying the Royals got lucky. But how do you view this Yankee lineup? Are they good enough here to work counts and get on base and manufacture runs? Because that's what they may need here against the Royals.
Yeah, and Seth Lugo is this year established himself as one of the best pitchers in baseball. I really, I mean, this is everybody loves to second guess Boone for his decisions. I really wish that we had Luis Gil going tonight. Now, maybe Aaron Boone is trying to, maybe he's overthinking this. Maybe he's thinking this beautifully, that you start Clark Schmidt, and if it goes bad, you can go to Luis Gil. And if it doesn't go bad with Clark Schmidt, then you can have Luis Gil ready for game four. But even in game four, they've announced it's going to be Cole. So yeah. I feel like this would have been a great moment there, but you've got a lineup that certainly can do work throughout the season. These two teams, Yankees and Royals, went head to head 7 times, and 3 of those 7 games, the Yankees put up double digits on the Kansas City pitching. So they have the ability to do it. We've seen in both of these games, game one and game two. In game one, it was in favor of the Yankees. In game two, it was in favor of the Royals. It kind of boiled down to one inning where it got away. In game two, it was the fourth inning when Rodon got out of control. And in game one, it was the fifth inning when Kansas City just started walking everybody, which is very uncharacteristic for their pitching, because that's why Kansas City's here. The Kansas City pitching has carried them to this point. So, you know, each game, it's been one inning. That first game for the Yankees, I called it an ugly win. Gerrit Cole was not in Gerrit Cole form. They got some breaks. They were the benefactor of some Royals mistakes and some Royals misexecution. And then in game two, Kansas City took advantage. So it's great. It feels like an evenly matched series, even though the Yankees have a far superior lineup. Kansas City's pitching is excellent, and it's really going to boil down to, can they work the counts with Lugo? Can they try to get into some hitter-friendly counts, take advantage of an opportunity? And look, I feel like, from the Yankees' perspective, being on the road here, this is pretty damn close to a must-win game. You can't go down 2-1 with KC with another game, and again, all that pitching they can throw at you.
Jim, handicap the rest of this Cleveland-Detroit series for us. Is Detroit with a 2-0 lead here in the bottom of the fifth, and getting some runners on base here in the bottom of the fifth as well. Let's assume right now that Detroit does go up 2-1. What do you counter with with your Cleveland, if you're Cleveland, and what does the rest of this series look like to you?
Well, I hate to say it. It's not going to matter what Cleveland does. If they don't win this game, Cleveland is up the creek, no paddle. Because Detroit, after game two, all they needed to do from 3 or 4, they only needed to get one of them to assure Tarik Skubal, if you need him, in game 5. And Skubal, to this point, has not allowed a run in his 2 postseason starts. They have been spectacular, and I would expect nothing else than spectacular from Tarik Skubal in game 5. So Cleveland really needs to come back and grab this game, because you don't want to set yourself up, because that's what will happen. Now, look, Detroit could always finish it in game 4, and then Tarik Skubal is ready to go in the ALCS game 1. But if Cleveland loses today and finds a way to win tomorrow, hey, guess what? Congratulations. You get to face Tarik Skubal in the elimination game, and you're going to hope that something strange happens and you're on the positive side of that, and Skubal somehow falters, or again, you can outlast him, similar to how the Mets outlasted Wheeler and the Phillies early on in that series, and get to the bullpen.
Yeah,
it's It's really one of those things. The fact that you have Tarek Skubal looming for Game 5, Detroit wins this game, puts them in a great spot.
Yeah, Detroit right now up 2-0. They are in the bottom of the fifth. Jim Riley, our friend, we're talking some baseball with him. Jim Riley, the Barreled Up podcast. You can check him out on YouTube and Ball Cap Sports as well. Jim, I haven't seen if the Dodgers have announced who they're starting tonight. They're going to have to make up their mind here pretty soon. But I just look at the two lineups, and I see the Padres mashing, and it certainly helps when you get a rookie of the year coming out of nowhere, Jackson Merrill, right in the middle of that lineup. And then I look at the Dodger lineup, very top heavy. This just feels like an inevitability. I don't know if it's tonight or if it's going to be Game 5, but the Padres clearly, in my mind, the better team here. But how do you view this matchup here tonight? Dodgers needing a win to stay alive.
There is just a wave of momentum the San Diego Padres are riding, and you've got a little brother trying to beat up on big brother and take big brother out, that whole thing. You had the I don't want to go as far as calling it a war of words, because it really wasn't that. I feel like the media maybe took it a little beyond, but a intense matchup. And you're right, this Padres team feels much more dangerous. So I was doing a live stream the other night, and somebody brought up that thought that the Padres lineup is far superior than the Dodgers lineup. And just first reaction to that was like, yeah, you're right. And then I was like, no, that can't be right. So I go online and I pull up the rosters, and I'm reminded of how dangerous this Dodgers lineup can be by looking at the names. Problem is, we're not really seeing much of that. Ohtani had an amazing first game of the series and really carried the Dodgers to that game. Shohei Ohtani, of the 7 runs that the Dodgers scored in the first game, he had his fingerprints on 6 of them, either directly by scoring the run or driving in the run or extending the inning, getting the hit, getting the guy who would inevitably score, getting that guy over in the scoring position. Had his fingerprints all over. Since then, he's 1-4-8 with 4 strikeouts and has only come up to bat with somebody on base ahead of them once. So the Padres have done a great job of eliminating the Shohei Ohtani factor these last 2 games. And because of it, they're now up 2-1. They're going to throw Dylan Cease tonight, who didn't look that great against the Dodgers in Game 1. But we know how good Dylan Cease can be. And the Dodgers are going to go with a bullpen day. They haven't announced a starter because they're probably going to wait last minute. They're probably waiting to see that this is the gamesmanship. They're probably waiting to see what the Padres' lineup is going to look like to decide if they want to start with a right-hander or a left-hander. They're going to play the matchups throughout this whole game, and I keep their fingers crossed that the Padres' lineup doesn't that those bats don't explode.
Yeah, Fernando Tatis in this series, .636 on base percentage. I mean, it's just it's ungodly. Question yeah. about what we saw up in Los Angeles. We didn't see it as much as, you know, last night, but I will say this. I love when fans are so into it and so passionate. And in my opinion, this actually is the best rivalry in baseball today. Do you think it went a little too far with the throwing things on the field? And what did you make of the whole Manny Machado? Was he really throwing the ball at Dave Roberts there?
You know, we can only take these players and what they said. Manny said he was throwing it towards the ball boy so that he could give it to somebody in the crowd. And the Dodgers say, oh, he was throwing it at Dave Roberts. I mean, it's like third grade. You have 2 kids. You're trying to figure out who did what, who pushed Sally over, and you're never going to get the straight story. But with the fans, it was very interesting. I don't know if you saw, I believe it was John Boy or Bleacher Report or somebody posted on Twitter or Instagram or one of the social media outlets a video that started the whole thing. Jerickson Profar was actually handing a baseball to a Dodgers fan in the front row, and you could kind of tell that fan didn't want the baseball, and Profar had a big smile on his face like he thought it was funny. He's like, here, I'm going to give this Dodger fan a baseball. And the Dodger fan's like, I don't want it. So the Dodger fan takes the ball from Jerickson Profar and throws it back towards in the direction of home plate, not in the direction of Jerickson Profar. It's like what Cubs fans do,
yeah.
or what a fan does when the road team hits a home run, throw it back.
Yeah,
basically what he did. But outside of that little bubble, outside of that situation between Profar and that Dodgers fan, there was another fan that was looks like would have been a row up, must have thought that meant it was go time, and he threw another ball, that one in the direction of Jerks and Profar, and then it got completely out of control. So it seemed like there were definitely some Dodger fans that were ready to get something fired up there, get something started. And unfortunately, it delays the game. Doesn't have too much of an impact on the game, but you can't do that. I mean, you can't just we see players get in trouble if they talk back or try to clap back at the fans. And then we get really mad at those players for doing that because they're the millionaires and they're the players. I hold fans just accountable. Just because you bought a ticket doesn't give you the right to be a jerk and doesn't certainly give you the right to throw anything on the field. I don't like it.
Jim, I want to go back to the Dodgers for a second because this is a team that's built to win championships, and then they add Ohtani. So if they fall short again this year, I mean, with their one championship coming during the weird COVID season, who are we assessing blame to here? What is it about the Dodgers with this roster being as stacked as it is where they can't get over and get more than just one title?
Well, this is all about, this year is all about injuries. And in years past, last year it was injuries to the pitching. This year it's injuries to the pitching again. I think if there's a head that needs to roll, it's going to have to be on the training side or something on the medical staff side. I don't know, because this team could have a stacked playoff rotation assembled with the guys they have on the injured list, with Tyler Glasnow, Gavin Stone, two players that pitched magnificently during the season are not available. Clayton Kershaw tried to come back. His toe wouldn't let him. Tony Gonsolin in the past has been a very effective pitcher for the Dodgers. Emmett Sheehan last year was very effective. These guys are all hurt. So this team, despite all of that, and even during the season, they dealt with a Mookie Betts injury, a Max Muncy injury, a Freddie Freeman personal issue. They have dealt with so much adversity that you would think it would help them get through times like this. But in the end, it seems like the injuries have sort of crept back up. Freddie Freeman is dealing with a twisted ankle. He can't run. Freddie Freeman can't run right now. Last thing you want is Freddie Freeman to hit a ball in the gap in the first inning because it's only going to be a single and it's going to slow everything down. I do wonder what the Dodgers front office thinks about if they give Dave Roberts a pass because of all the injuries, if they lose this series to the Padres. That is the interesting thing. I think they could go. I think Dave Roberts could survive a postseason where they don't win the World Series. But I don't know, even with the injuries, if he can survive a postseason where they drop in the second round again, like last year, to a team that front office views as far inferior. Last year was Arizona. This year would be San Diego. That'd be a really bad look. And if they give him one more chance or let him keep his job, it will have to be the last his last chance.
Jim Riley, the Barreled Up Podcast, our guest. You can listen to it in the Odyssey app, talking some baseball. Jim, Mets and Phillies here. That's coming up at 5 o'clock. And going back to game one in this series, Zach Wheeler was magnificent for the Phillies.
Mm-hmm.
But he can't pitch all nine innings. And then they turn it over to the bullpen. And it's not like the Mets bullpen has been lights out either. Is this just going to come down simply to whose bullpen sucks less here in game four and potentially game five?
You know, I look at the matchups tonight. Jose Quintana has looked really good in the postseason this year. He pitched in the clincher, that Brewers game in the wild card round. He was magnificent. He pitched against the Phillies in September and completely shut them down. You also had in 2022, he saw the October version of the Phillies when he was on the Cardinals. So Jose Quintana has so much confidence that he has going into this start tonight that I really expect him to shine. I believe if as long as everything's firing right, the mechanics are right, the velocity is right, as long as Quintana is Quintana, then he is going to shut the Phillies down. He's got He's done it recently. He's done it in the past. He's faced this lineup in October. So he checks all the boxes. Suarez makes me nervous. So I don't know if it's necessarily going to be a bullpen game, because Ranger Suarez, who has really not been good the second half of the season. In September, Ranger Suarez's ERA went over 6. So you have the of the starters that Philly was going to throw out there, Ranger Suarez is the most susceptible to being pounced. He's going tonight. And this bullpen, you brought it up, I don't have a ton of faith in the Phillies' bullpen either. So these Mets bats that have been dangerous, Mark Vientos is having an amazing postseason. His first postseason, he's been great. You'd think that Mark Vientos has been a postseason veteran of 5 or 6, 7 years. Pete Alonso is having major moment, big moment after big moment. This feels like the Phillies are in trouble tonight, because I don't like Suarez going, and if you got to take Suarez out, I don't like what the options are coming out of the bullpen. I think the Phillies are in trouble.
Do you think that the Phillies offensively could, I mean, they obviously get more out of guys like Trey Turner, but it feels like Trey Turner needs to have a game here at some point where you could say, oh, that was Trey Turner's win.
No, they need that. This team right now, Marsh, Realmuto, those two don't have a hit yet in this series. Alec Boehm has one hit. Kyle Schwarber, since that leadoff home run against Kodai Senga in game one, he has one hit since that home run. So you've got, yes, you're looking for Trey Turner to have a big game. You're looking for Bryce to have a big game. But you're also looking for something out of half of the other guys in that lineup. They've got to step up. It really feels like if I was a Phillies fan, of all of these teams playing today, that fan base would be the highest panic level, would be a Phillies fan right now.
I'm going to admit I'm not a fan of Wainwright and Przinski here. Maybe that's because, you know, watching a lot of Mets baseball, I'm spoiled by Keith and Ron and Gary. But they're better, this group on FS1. Where do you come down on Bob Costas?
Oh, here we go.
Bob Costas, I think if you are over the age of 50, you probably love Bob Costas. And then 40 to 50, he's very polarizing. And then if you're under the age of 40, you probably can't stand him. I mean, I grew up with Bob Costas doing games. I remember Bob Costas waxing poetically about baseball in the Ken Burns documentary. I give Bob Costas a longer leash. I know that some of the stuff is not that great. There's a clip that went around of after Stanton hitting into the double play, Bob Costas sounding defeated that Stanton had hit into a double play, and they're talking about how, look at this, he's such a Yankees homer and all this and all that. And it's one of the reasons why I've sort of taken a step back from Twitter, because, I mean, as we all know, there's so many uninformed out there that are boasting about opinions that they think are rock solid in their standing. Bob Costas had just been going on about how the Yankees, to take care of Stanton, don't let him bust it out of the game, run hard, bust it up the line. They want him to stay healthy for his bat. They're more interested in him staying in the lineup to hit home runs than they are him trying to beat out plays at first base. So he had just been going on about that. And then almost as if when you're giving an example, you're talking about why someone can't do something. And then that thing happens, you kind of almost had to have this, like, disappointed way about it. Like, well, see, there it is. That's what happened. So I know that, again, a lot of people, Bob Costas is firing up a lot of people right now. I guess I have a longer leash for Bob. And he's good for a gaffe or two every game. Where are you guys at with Bob Costas? I'm curious.
Go ahead, Gene. You brought it up.
He is the last of his kind. I think Bob emulates you brought up Ken Burns baseball, the Vin Scullys, the Red Barbers, all those guys that I'm going to carry the broadcast myself. And broadcasting in 2024, especially when you have a guy like Ron Darling and you have sideline reporters and you have everything else, to me, when you get to postseason baseball, less is more. I don't need your witty stuff about the Penguins and everything else and history lesson and everything. He needs to dial it back, and I don't think that the postseason format, he would be great as a radio guy doing 162 games by himself. And who does that anymore? Sure. No one.
Right. I agree with pretty much everything you said, Jim, and I will give him a little bit of a longer leash because, like you, I remember just watching him growing up and thinking, this guy's really good at his job. And I think he is really good at his job. I would just bump it up maybe. You said anybody over the age of 50 loves it. I would bump it up to, Gene, you're 54, I want to say?
53.
Let's go 55. Anybody over the age of 55 probably has a bigger appreciation for it.
We've got to get above Gene.
Yeah, we got to get it above Gene, and then I think we're okay. I think that Gene and my neighbor Timmy Parmesan. Those are the two guys that I've heard about it the most.
Funny, like we had the same exact take, texting danger.
Yeah, absolutely. Jim, tell us about Barreled Up. Tell us about Ball Cap while we have a couple of minutes here. We appreciate you giving us some of this time here.
Yeah, no, I love coming on and talking baseball with you guys anytime. Happy to do it. Make sure anybody who hasn't hit up the Barreled Up podcast on the Odyssey Network or Ball Cap Sports. Check it out. I am all over postseason baseball right now. Content is and shows are dropping every single day. And once this thing is over, we'll be diving into all of the excitement and the activity that surrounds the offseason with free agents and trades. So it's exciting right now. And even though the baseball season ends here in a couple of weeks, I think the excitement is just getting started because we have all of the player movement throughout the winter.
Oh, you know, it's a Met fan. No. La, la, la. I don't want to talk about Alonzo.
Yeah, talk about that for a second, because that was the funniest thing to me about the Alonzo home run against the Brewers, is that moments before Alonzo hit that home run, and I know you're not on X as much as you used to be, Jim, but I was scrolling through my feed, and the Mets fans in my feed,
people, get him off.
They couldn't wait to get this guy off their roster. Well, that was a nice run. Can't wait for Alonzo to leave this team. Then he becomes the hero, which I kind of have a little bit of an issue with as far as your fandom is concerned, but has he done something now where it's like, if you're the Mets, you're like, well, we can't move on from him. What do you think his pathway is here?
I think he has to be back. I think this only solidifies that. I can remember this time last year, I started talking about Pete Alonso trades, and Mets fans were coming at me with pitchforks and knives. They wanted to take me out. And then this year happened, and his power's a little down, and he's given some sound bites that I think fans are kind of like, not too happy with. I think they were just preparing themselves, and they over-prepared themselves for him to be off the team, and now you're getting that refresher, that reminder of how much of a power hitter he is. He's one of the best power hitters in the game, and when you look at the free agent market, guys, it's going to be very hard to get Juan Soto on that team. And when Juan Soto either goes back to the Yankees or anywhere else, when you think about, okay, what's the next big power bat in this market? It's Pete Alonso. So you can't – I think he needs to be back, and I do think this postseason series with the home run in Milwaukee and a big home run against the Phillies, and I think he's due for another big moment or two. This Mets team, I started talking about it 2 months ago, MLB and ESPN have started picking up on it. This Mets team feels like it is a team of destiny kind of thing. And Pete Alonso is just grabbing on to that. And you're seeing some of that divine intervention with Pete Alonso's at bats now. He's got to be back. I think he's a Met.
Well, meaning if the Mets kind of bow out here, whether it's Philadelphia or the next round, or dare I say the World Series, you will have those memorable home runs. In that city, if the Yankees bow out and Aaron Judge doesn't start hitting, I mean, that's just a natural comparison here, that Aaron Judge right now to this day, and it's only been a couple games, he hasn't shown up yet.
No, he hasn't, but and again, this is when top pitching is going to neutralize top hitting. I mean, Joey Ohtani, the last two games, 1-for-8, 4 strikeouts. So these guys can go through these stretches. I think you're right. If the Yankees go down to Kansas City and Aaron Judge is struggling, the finger point is going to happen, and he's gonna have to deal with that. He's gonna have some uncomfortable interview questions that he's gonna have to answer. But at the end of the day, I think Yankees fans will rally around Aaron Judge. He just can't make this a regular thing. He can't make this something that is something you see every year. I think Yankee fans will rally back around him once they, if it even happens, once they cool off.
You're the best, bud. Thanks for giving us the time. Let's do it again soon.
Thanks, guys. Talk soon.
You got it. Jim Riley, Ballcap Sports on YouTube. And don't forget to check out the Barreled Up podcast, the Audacy exclusive and the free-to-download Audacy app, AUDACY, your home for all your favorite audio, including the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia.
We've got the Tigers nursing this 2-0 lead, bottom of the six against the Guardians, and coming up in about 10 minutes.
Uh-huh. Well, this is my tease for happy hour. If you want to hear a distracted Gene Battaglia, stay with us, because the 5 o'clock hour... It's
I
good
will not be distracted. I will be dispensing my Bills takes, my concerns about James Cook and Khalil Shakir. We'll give you insight on the Buffalo Bills. I will not be distracted whatsoever, Mike Dana.
All right. Yeah, there you have it. There's the words of Gene Battaglia as we get ready for our first pitch here between the Mets and the Phillies.
This is why live radio is better than any podcast. I'm sorry. Like, we're bringing this to you live.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get to happy hour next. We have time for your calls if you want to pull up a stool. 585-866-4FAN. 866-4326.
You're listening to the Sports Bar with Danger and Battaglia. 95.7 FM and AM 950. The Fan Rochester.